Karen Hartglass, and you're listening to It's All About Food. How are you doing today on this May 30th, 2012? Well, we get to talk about food on this show, my favorite subject, and touch a lot of different subjects related to food, food and health, food and the environment, food and all life on Earth. And I've been reflecting a lot lately on food. Well, I think about food all the time. But I've been realizing how many of us who are talking about the alternative food movement and trying to change the way our food is grown and how it's grown, going from giant agribusiness to encouraging more organic, locally grown farming, farming that is sustainable. I realize that a lot of us that are in this conversation really have a privilege to be able to make choices about our food. There are many people who can't even make choices because either access to food or because of their financial situation. They just eat whatever they can, and that's a problem. We should all have access to affordable, healthy food. And there's a wide range of that. And so what I'm really focusing on lately is aligning myself with other people that are in the alternative food movement. I was exposed to this with a great deal at the Brooklyn Food Conference recently. There were so many different panels, over 175, with people talking about all different kinds of issues when it comes to food. And the thing is, many of us disagree on some of the fine points, and I think it's so important that we align on the broad strokes, the big issues: organic, fresh, locally grown food that supports our communities. And with that, I'm going to introduce my first guest. He's an author, Jim Vanderpoel. He has a new book, Conversations with the Land, and he farms and writes in western Minnesota, a world very different from the one in which he was raised in the 1950s and 60s. The small, diversified farms and tight-knit communities of his youth have been replaced by town jobs and gigantic equipment operating on huge tracts of land. The culture of the agriculture that Jim knew is almost entirely gone, and he wants it back. Through his farming, alternative marketing, writing, and work with sustainable agriculture groups in Minnesota, Jim is making an important contribution toward efforts to resurrect that culture. We're others simply pine for days of yore and lament what has happened. In Conversations with the Land, Jim offers a clear and down-to-earth vision for what each of us can do to return agriculture to something that can do better by the environment, the people who live within it, and even the nation as a whole. Those who are concerned that we have moved too far from the land will find much to think about and draw inspiration from in the pages of this book. Thank you for joining me on It's All About Food, Jim.
Well, I'm happy to be with you.
Yeah, I read your book. I enjoyed it. I like, especially in New York City, books that have short chapters, unique essays. So this is a collection of essays. It's very convenient to read on a subway.
Yeah, it's good.
Yeah, when you're just sitting and you don't have a lot of time, you can get a nugget each time and then get back to it later. So very good. There's a lot of passion in this book and a lot of different emotions, and we might hit on some of them. So the first thing I wanted to talk about was the beauty and the love of the land that you find over the seasons, the change that goes on, how dynamic it all is, how surprising it all is. So there's a number of different essays where you kind of go over different situations like that.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
What is it that is so, what's the word I'm looking for? Well, the seasons. Farming is never, ever the same.
No, it's not. And it takes command of your life, basically, when you do it, or when you do it for as long as I've done it. It because the day length constantly changes, and because the work needs to fit the season, and the seasons in a sense chase the work, so that you get it done when it needs to be done instead of 2 weeks or 2 months too late. There's that constant attention to basically the environment or the world that you're living in. I call it, or I think of it as a conversation, and that's part of the reason why I use the title I do. It's a conversation, it's a communication with the environment. I'm not exactly sure how to express it more fully than that.
I really like the title, and it's so important to pay attention, and so many of us don't pay attention to most things that pass us by. So that's really an accomplished skill that you've developed, and that unfortunately many of us have lost through the generations.
Yeah, that's right. And you know, one of the things that I try to point out in several of the essays is that it's important for us, I think, whatever we're doing, to live in the place we're living. And that starts with living in our own bodies instead of on television or in the on the internet.
Mm-hmm.
You don't have to farm to do that, but farming, at least farming the way we do here on this farm, kind of insists on it. And I guess I feel pretty lucky. I'm not sure that with another occupation I would have been led into the kind of approach to my surroundings that I am.
Sure. Well, there's lots of things we could always imagine. Oh, I could have done that, or what would have happened if I made that choice. But you're definitely, you seem very well suited, and I'm for farming.
Yes, I think I am. It's a curse sometimes, of course. Most of the time, it's a blessing. So.
Well, you know, a lot of things in life, a lot of things that people have difficulty in life, any challenge that comes along, we tend to resist. And that makes it so much more of a struggle, no matter what challenge it is resisting. And the feeling that I got with farming was that you understand you're not in control.
Yes, that's right.
You just got to go with whatever comes. Try and be prepared.
Yes. In order to operate a farm or to live on a farm and work on a farm, you need to be pretty steady temperament and pretty strong-minded. But at the same time, you have to admit that everything that you think you've got planned for the day or for the week or for your life, or for this project or the other that has to do with the farm, can be knocked awry and taken apart in an instant just by a change in the weather, by something, in the biology of the plants, animals that you're working with, and by a number of other things, the markets and the financial system, for example.
Now, something that we are not doing, we as a global culture, when we evaluate wealth in the world, we don't really... I don't think the equation has got it down at all, because I just imagine, I'm not a doom and gloom kind of person, but if we had, you know, some horrible crisis that made it really difficult for people in urban areas to access food, it would really, really be serious. And we do not value people who own land and grow food on that land enough. But when if we ever come to a situation where we're out, where, you know, everything falls apart, those that are on the farms with the food are the ones that are going to survive.
Yes, that's right. And if we ever come to a situation where everything falls apart, my hope, and I'm sure probably yours as well, is that it falls apart a little slowly, so that we've got time to react to it. Because we have ourselves in a lot of ways in a situation that could be a catastrophe if we're facing a sudden change.
And so we don't value farming enough, or even at all in some situations. People don't even realize we need to eat every day. We just
Yes.
take food for granted. Many of us do.
Mm-hmm.
And so now we're in this situation where we have really given away our choices. We've given away our freedom when it comes to food by allowing giant corporations to take over and do what they will with our food system.
That's right. We have, and it's I guess that's the situation I was talking about just a minute ago, where we've put ourselves in a position where a change could be a catastrophe. When you put that kind of control in the hands of so few people, so few powerful people that that have a kind of a truncated goal having to do with making lots of money generally, and just under the theory that things are then going to work out, it's almost we approach food almost like a religious belief, that is, that our modern food system is all automatically going to be able to adjust immediately to whatever changes might be forced upon it, and we're always going to be able to find what we need to lay our hands on the grocery store. And I don't think that's true.
You write in many different essays. There are some continuing themes, but if you were the empire of the world, the emperor, or in charge of the entire world, I get a feeling for how you might change things. But it's clear we have trouble with the economy. Many people are out of work, and we've created this situation.
Yes.
By taking away jobs, especially on farms, by having these big corporations grow in really unsustainable ways. Maybe you could talk a little bit about that, how important it is for kids to grow up in a farming environment and participate. And
I've written in a few places, in a few essays in the book, about that subject. Because when you live in a rural area, you're always almost automatically needing to be concerned about the kids, because we're in a situation where we have steadily shrinking populations. Our towns are smaller and smaller each decade. Our schools are needing to consolidate, and the school buses travel more and more miles to get enough kids together to actually operate a school. And we have, in all too many cases, both parents working some miles away from home. Often the kids are not seen to as well as they should be, because the income from the jobs the parents have just really isn't enough, because that's not paid well enough. As a matter of fact, we short as a nation in an area like this, we short our kids because we do not honor what the entire working people do, including farming and a lot of other things as well that make our economy and our society run. So yeah, I've talked about I have one essay in the book entitled Boys, and it simply is my reflection on what it seems to be to grow up male in this day and age, compared to what it was when I grew up some 60 years ago on this farm that I'm operating today. And the difference, as I wrote that essay, the difference became really startling to me. I grew up wanting to demonstrate my value to my elders. And that was economic value, as well as social value, and that I would fit in, and so on. It was a great joy to me. The day came that I could keep up in terms of physical work with my own father, and with my uncles and hired hands and neighbors that got together to do the work. And when I really arrived, at that stage of young male adulthood where I could do that, I could sense acceptance all the way around the circle, and of men that were working, that I was working with. And I don't think very many boys have that chance today. I think the closest that we get with it is high school athletics, and of course that's only a minority of the kids that participate in that. I end that essay by saying something, I believe, if I'm remembering it right, something about girls to the effect that I wasn't speaking of girls because I didn't grow up one, and I wouldn't be able to talk intelligently about it. But I think that, as a general rule, we can only do a good job with our kids by needing them in a lot of ways. One of them is economic. That's important. But needing them socially, needing them in terms of their view of what the world looks like, and what they can tell us older ones who have got more experience than they do, you know, but a different perception because we didn't grow up with the same surrounding social furniture that they have. I think we need to need our kids, and I think when we can figure out ways and means of doing that in a real way, that is, I think we'll start having fewer our kids will have fewer problems growing up.
I agree with you 100%. We seem to be doing less and less in this country. So we've shipped so much manufacturing overseas, and even some of the farming that's done in with giant agribusiness. I know that we have a lot of illegal aliens and very low paid foreigners that do a lot of the work, mostly
yes.
because people don't want to do that work, and the pay isn't good enough for
yeah.
that work.
Well, that's it, of course. And when in one of my essays here too, I write about where I think this started. I mean, it's kind of in the 70s when corporations caught on to the fact that that they could benefit at least financially by disrespecting labor, and it's been getting steadily worse ever since. I'm sitting on the phone talking now, just 6 miles south of a dairy that milks 6,000 cows every day.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
and they have built several bunkhouses to house the young men they get from Ecuador and Colombia in order to do that work, and it's not that's the most pleasant livestock kind of work that there is, because it isn't. Being confinement, it's not real attractive work, really, I don't think, for anybody. But the fact of it is that the young folks are here from South America because the farm that gets them in can pay lower wages that way. That's really the entire fact. There would be people in our society, people that have been here for some generations, that were born here, that would take those jobs if they paid 50% more than they do.
Yeah, absolutely. Everything is so crazy in terms of where the subsidies go to pay for who benefits and who doesn't, and we pay for so much in our tax dollars that are invisible to us. And if we could take some of that and put it towards paying better salaries for
yes.
people, it would make
yes.
such a difference.
You make a wonderful point, and it pops up here and there in my writing, which, by the way, is ongoing. This is a collection of columns, and I write one every month. But you make a wonderful point about that the money that we are spending helping out victims would be better spent organizing an economy that didn't produce so many victims.
Yep.
You know, we don't seem to get that. There doesn't seem to be any political voice for that in our government and our centers of power. And so it just keeps on getting worse and worse. Another thing I think that, you know, that shouldn't be ignored, that can't be ignored from my point of view, and I feel very strongly about that, or about this, is that that kind of a situation where young men who are not paid enough money and are a long ways away from home are caring for livestock is kind of, in and of itself, not a good situation for the livestock either.
I've heard so many horrific stories about workers that are brought in from other countries, and some of them are treated almost like slaves.
Yes.
And this is in our country, America. But, you know, there are things that we can do, aren't there?
There are.
What can we do, Jim? What can we do?
Well, Are you asking me for suggestions?
Yes.
Okay.
Help.
All right. Well, you know, and I think you know what my answer is going to be. If you don't, you will by the time I'm done giving it. And that is that, you know, this whole idea of a small change that I write about in the last essay of the book, which is five or six columns put together, we best change things by changing how we think and changing how we live. And that requires going a little out of our pathway. You know, it maybe requires buying food at a farmer market. Maybe it requires making a link with a farmer for some of the things that you want to buy. Or maybe it requires simply putting pressure on a grocery store or choosing a grocery store that is willing to be pressured to establish better communications between you, the buyer, and the people that are supplying the store. In parts of the world, and I'm talking more, I think, about Europe here, there are postings on the supermarket or on the market walls leading you into understanding who it is that brought the food and what some of the ins and outs of producing it were. There's a place for electronic communications in that. So I think that you know, that's the best place to start, and you can do more than start. You can make up your mind to live your life that way. You can also, if you have access to some space, you can garden. Gardening teaches a lot about what life and about what farming really is. Depending on your neighborhood, you might get in a few backyard chickens, which are a wonderful kind of a project because it teaches you about what really tastes good in an egg, and it may teach you about some of the silly attitudes of some of your neighbors too. You know, depending on your situation. But you know, whatever. I think what it amounts to is paying more attention to what we eat, and if we have the wherewithal to do it, and everybody doesn't, as you pointed out in your lead-in, but if we have the wherewithal to do it, to be willing to pay a bit more for that kind of food.
Well, it's all about a long-term perspective, and that's just something that's unheard of in this country. Everything is short term. Pay the little least amount you can without thinking of the long term impact of your purchase and where it comes from.
Yeah. Yes, that's right. You know, we talk in our circles here a lot about three-part goals and double bottom lines and things like that. You know, the double bottom line being not only cash profit, but also that we produce quality. The idea of a profitable farm is not enough by itself, that there has to be a high quality of life connected with it, and that there has to be a community connection connected with it. I guess what I'm saying is that we need to try whatever we can think of to do the best we can to encourage that kind of thinking and planning in the people that we buy from, instead of just the cash profit margin.
There are a number of really critical things that absolutely have to change. And this is my vision. I would love to see all the giant corporations out of food production. I would like to see the return of small farms. I would like to see genetically modified food and seeds disappear, and think foods to be grown organically and for people to get most of their food within a region that's near where they live.
I can't argue with a single item.
And, you know, I don't know if you're aware of this, Jim, but I'm a vegan, and I encourage people to eat plant foods, and I know that you're a livestock farmer. And we may not agree on some things, but we definitely can agree on some very, very big concepts, and those are the ones that I just outlined, and they're so important.
I think we can. I agree.
There was one of my favorite essays was in the beginning when you talked about the weatherman and the weather women on television.
Yeah. Weather reports sound different to a farmer than they do to most people, I think. So
It was funny because I related to it, and I never really thought about it the way you put it.
Yeah, yeah.
Where for us, for most of us, the weather matters on the weekends.
Yes, that's true, and I can see where that comes from.
And I'm here in New York, and I think it's CBS where we get the weather with Lonnie something or other, but he's always, we see him around New York City sometimes riding his bike, and he's on television in his gorgeous suits.
Sure.
Telling us about the weather, and it's a joke.
Yeah.
Okay, let's see. We just have a few more minutes, and let's see. Have you ever experienced or been pressured by some of the giant agribusiness companies when it came to your own business? I mean, I've heard about so many stories about small farmers not being able to compete and sometimes actually being run off the land.
Yeah. The latest version of that is generally or often has to do with Monsanto and their efforts to protect their patented seeds, and they're pretty aggressive in court don't have too much trouble getting their way as far as cooperation out of law enforcement and so on. If they think some farmer has saved seed of theirs, they regard that as patent infringement, and so then they pursue that person in court. So that's kind of the latest version of that.
You know people that have experienced this.
I know of people. I don't have any close friends, and nobody in this community that I know of. What we do have, in kind of a more general way, is anybody that farms organically, and our farmland is certified organic, you worry about GMO drift.
Yep.
Corn is, of course, very promiscuous, and the pollen goes for miles in a wind. And if the pollen drifts from my neighbor's GMO corn to my organic corn, what I'm going to harvest at the end of the year is going to be something less than organic, whether I wanted it that way or not. And so you kind of live in a little anxiety, thinking that at some point, the organic buyers are going to apply another test, and they're going to see that that GMO amount in there, and I'm going to be able or not be able to sell my crop that year. Or maybe it might be possible that I might even be pursued by the company that thinks that that I planted seed, you know, without buying it from them, because I've heard those stories, and I have every reason to believe they're true. So it's not a personal experience as much as a kind of a generalized anxiety about that. Before the GMO controversy grew up over the past two decades, farmers my size have encountered the agribusiness largely through price discrimination, and that has taken place not so much when we sold our products as when we bought our input, when we bought our seeds and so on.
Mm-hmm.
We can't get the volume deals on seeds, so we're paying sometimes a good deal more money for the same seed. Sometimes on livestock particularly, it will happen that if you don't sell enough animals at a time, you're going to take a cut in the price on those as well. I've had that happen to me, so that I've taken 10% less price because I'm bringing in 10 hogs instead of 100. It's those kinds of things that the agribusiness corporations are always there. They kind of make the playing field in terms of our finances and our economy, and it's kind of always a worry. Sometimes it really reaches out and hits you, but most of the time you're just kind of living with that generalized worry.
Well, thank you so much for talking to me on It's All About Food, Jim. And I hope you don't worry too much. Have some peace in your life.
Yes, so do I.
Yeah, enjoy your farm and your family. And thanks for writing Conversations with the Land. I really enjoyed reading it.
Okay.
Okay.
Thank you. Thanks for having me on.